As part of the budget debate here at the Capitol, Democrats in the Senate and Assembly are pushing language that would add conditions favorable to unions on construction projects at New York's public colleges and universities that come with a price tag of at least $3 million. To share concerns about this effort, we're joined by Brian Sampson, president of the Empire State Chapter of the Associated Builders and Contractors. Welcome back to the show, Brian.
Thank you, David. Great to be back.
Well, before we get into our conversation, can you remind listeners about the perspective that you bring to this conversation? For example, what kind of builders and contractors do you represent, and who might be outside the purview of your organization?
We represent contractors that have traditionally not been signatory to collective bargaining agreements. So I guess in that instance, you would say they're non-union companies. We're not an anti-union organization. We are a group of contractors that look at the bidding process as just being fair and open without any undue influence from the government, either one way or the other. And so when we see things like project labor agreements or apprenticeship mandates or responsible contractor ordinances, we get engaged on those because the people that we represent, by and large, they're about 80% of the construction workforce. So anytime you're going to restrict who can bid on a project, you're going to eliminate a large portion of the workforce of the state of New York. So we get engaged on those issues that are important to those members.
And the way project labor agreements are framed by Democratic lawmakers is that they are essentially a pre-hire collective bargaining agreement between a contractor and a quote-unquote bona fide building and construction trade labor organization, designating it as the representative for all persons who are performing work on what would be a public work project. Does that make sense to you? Is that a fair description?
Yes, that's exactly what they are. But and it'll have terms in them that will say 3 out of every 4 workers need to come from the local union hall, or 2 out of every 3 in some areas of the state. It's, you know, 50% need to come from the local union hall. And in exchange for that, the building trades will agree not to strike. They'll agree to concessions such as harmonizing work schedules, consolidating holiday schedules. So they have to identify some form of a labor savings. Those are very alleged savings. We don't do anything post-PLA to determine if those savings were actually realized. So, yes. And that's why we tend to be opposed, because we can't put the people that are employed by our members on those projects. So our members just choose not to bid that work. And that becomes a disservice to the state of New York and the taxpayers.
Well, in this push from Democratic state lawmakers, they're arguing that while contracts that SUNY has put out in the past use public dollars to finance their development and come with prevailing wage requirements, they feel like too many of these contracts are going to out-of-state companies, and they worry, according to the sponsors of a standalone version of this, that they're not meeting the needs of the workers, and they claim that some of these firms that are getting contracts from SUNY have histories of unsafe building practices and other labor issues, which is why they want to essentially narrow the pool, as you would say, by requiring a project labor agreement. What do you think of the situation that they're describing in terms of how SUNY dollars are being utilized now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a garbage argument, David, and it's been around for decades, and it's been disproven time and time again. The reality is SUNY projects are required to pay prevailing wage and benefits, meaning every worker on that project, regardless of whether you're union or non-union, you're going to be paid the same amount of wages and benefits. So that is out of the decision-making process. What happens is, because of efficiencies within a workforce, meaning our members don't have work jurisdictional issues that are tied to the collective bargaining agreement that says carpenters can only do carpentry work and drywallers can only do drywall work and plasterers can only do plaster work, our members are cross-trained, so they can do all of those things. And when they're a carpenter, they're paid the carpenter rate. When they're doing drywall, they're paid the drywall rate. And when they're a mutter and a taper, they're paid the plasterer's rate. So, you know, it's a hollow argument. And the sad part of it is because of how construction is done and because some of the things that we put into these projects have a unique requirement for how they are installed, sometimes those manufacturers, in order to validate their warranty, they will say certain contractors have to be on site to install those. And that's where we get this quote unquote out of state contractor doing the work. You know, I think if you drive around a SUNY campus, and let's be honest, most of the SUNY campuses are in upstate New York. So if you go to Plattsburgh or you go to Potsdam or Cortland or Geneseo or Fredonia, those are going to be people that are from the state of New York working on those projects. You keep the wages local. They spend their money local. They pay their taxes local. The only thing we're asking for in this instance is for not to have a restriction of a PLA. Let SUNY figure out who's the best contractor to do that work and let them go to work and benefit the community where they're doing that project.
Well, before we move on, let me reintroduce you for listeners just joining us. This is the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with Brian Sampson, the president of the Empire State Chapter of the Associated Builders and Contractors. So when you think about the rationale for something like this project labor agreement language, as opposed to what might be actually driving it, does it seem like this is primarily a carve out for the unions that would benefit and allow them to potentially grow their membership, and they have strength in, say, Democratic politics? Thus, there's this wonderful symbiotic cycle that this type of legislation feeds?
Yes, there's a reason why politicians push PLAs and unions support them. It's because it's mutually beneficial for both. The unions contribute tens of thousands of dollars to political campaigns every year, and they expect something in return. In this instance, the return is the project labor agreement. So this is just two different organizations or entities scratching each other's backs, and they're doing it at the detriment of most of the construction workforce and every taxpayer in the state of New York. And it's ridiculous. I get it. It's legal. It's a part of law. But the reality is, if PLAs were so wonderful and if no strikes ever occurred, I guess we could look at that. But the reality is, in the state of New York, we never do post-PLA studies. If they're so wonderful, so let's do the study after the fact and see if those savings were actually realized. If they were, I'll shut my mouth, but they won't be. We know what's out there. We know how these things work. The savings are never actualized and nobody cares. We do, and we fight them.
The standalone legislation also paves the way for an agency to require the use of PLAs on SUNY-funded construction projects of less than $3 million, as opposed to mandating them for everything above $3 million. What do you think of that flexibility?
If the number were different, would I have a different opinion? I don't really know. Here's what we do know. There's currently in the state about 100 different projects that are funded through the SUNY Construction Fund. It's about it's just short of $2 billion worth of work over, you know, a few year period. 94 out of those almost 100 projects are going to be captured under this $3 million threshold. So effectively, what you're saying is keeping it at that $3 million threshold is saying we're just going to capture all these projects and make them all go under a PLA. At the end of the day, it doesn't benefit anybody other than the unions and the politicians who continue to get their campaign contributions.
Well, finally, I want to pivot to an issue that's getting a little more attention than project labor agreements and SUNY, and that is this debate over how to increase more housing as well as some sort of tenant protections in New York. There seems to be a piece of this pie that every stakeholder in New York has some interest in. So from your perspective, what are you concerned about when it comes to this debate and the possibility of holistic action on housing?
That's a great question, David. There's a couple things. First of all, don't be surprised by this. They want to figure out how to put PLAs on affordable housing projects. So let's just take that out of the equation. I think we have to come to a reality here and understand just basic economics. When you make the construction of a project more expensive. And you do that by dictating prevailing wage standards, you know, different benefit standards. Inevitably, what happens is you create a higher cost on the backside when the project is done. What we have to do here in the state of New York is have a real conversation about affordable and market rate housing. And the simple fact is New York is a high tax, high cost, high regulation state. We've had countless conversations over the years about the scaffold law and the impact on, you know, general liability insurance and workers' comp. And now we want to have this conversation about just, well, let's just make the project that much more expensive. It's ludicrous. If we want our young people to stay, if we want people to grow families here in the state of New York, we have to figure out a way to put housing on the market that is affordable for people. And we do that by letting the market dictate the wages and the benefits that should be paid, who gets to do the work, who's most qualified to do the work, and then eliminate a lot of the regulations that slow these things down. And we get that NIMBY approach to the world. We want to grow New York. We want to stop our population loss. The way we do that is to build affordable market rate housing for people to stay. And I hope that we can figure that out in this budget, in this legislative session.
Are you agnostic about other elements that are being debated, such as wages or certain tenant protections or tax abatements versus tax credits for developers?
No, we're not. We tend not to be too agnostic on anything construction related. We need a 421A type of program to encourage the development of in New York City. It's just a reality. The property, the value of properties down there is just too much. We need to do that. We need to have realistic wages that incentivize an owner to invest those dollars in New York rather than where the population is actually going, which is, you know, towards the Carolinas, Georgias, Floridas, you know, in that area. And I think the other part that people just have to understand is if you're going to try to attach something like good cause eviction to a 421A or some other abatement or tax credit system, that's only going to benefit the owners and the developers who actually get that abatement or that incentive. The landlords are now essentially stuck with a regulation that limits their ability to control their own properties. They didn't get the benefit of an abatement, but they're going to get stuck with the cost of a good cause eviction. So there has to be an understanding that there's a difference for both. We want people to invest in their properties. We want them to renovate their properties. When they do that, obviously there's going to be a cost on the rental side for that unit. Some people may not like it, but I think if they put their own dollars and they had a little bit of skin in the game and they were an actual owner of a property, they'd look at it very differently because they would want as much return on that investment as they could possibly get. Right now, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of elected officials who are property owners.
Well, we've been speaking with Brian Sampson. He is the president of the Empire State Chapter of the Associated Builders and Contractors. Brian, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
We always appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Support for the Capital Pressroom is provided by National Fuel and its shareholders, a utility providing natural gas service to heat homes and businesses across Western New York. Information on National Fuel's response to proposals to transition away from natural gas service is available at betterplannobans.com.